Support for this program is provided by Chevron, the human energy company.
Hey, this is Politico Energy. I'm Catherine Morehouse. President Joe Biden is in the midst of a big push to clean up the nation's drinking water, but it could drive water systems into private hands. Here's what I mean. The Biden administration released new rules last month that aim to get rid of toxic contaminants known as forever chemicals from our water supply. But actually achieving what Biden is trying to do may be too challenging for public water utilities. And as a result, those public utilities may start selling their systems to private companies, which is pretty controversial and could actually saddle local communities with higher costs. So today, I chat with Politico's Annie Snyder to understand how Biden's new rules could actually privatize water and what that means for people's water bills. It's Monday, May 6th.
So I think to understand why this particular rule is so challenging, you have to understand the landscape of water utilities across the U.S. The vast majority of systems that are going to have to comply with all federal drinking water regulations are these much smaller, far less well-staffed, far less well-resourced systems. And those smaller and mid-sized systems have long been struggling to provide affordable, clean drinking water to their customers. The nation's drinking water infrastructure is aging. It needs just sort of basic upgrades for, you know, to be able to continue functioning. At the same time, it's facing new threats like cyber attacks and the need to remove lead pipes and other things that we're sort of increasingly realizing as a country need to be dealt with. So that's the backdrop in which these new PFAS regulations are coming online. And this regulation in particular is incredibly complicated and incredibly costly. So it's got technical complexities that are related to monitoring, related to understanding whether or not you're in violation of the regulation. And then if you need to upgrade your system to deal with these chemicals, that too is an incredibly complex thing, sort of deciding what kind of technology you're going to use, figuring out how you're going to pay for it. And so something that's complicated for even the larger drinking water utilities, but is going to be incredibly challenging for these small and mid-sized systems across the country that are already struggling and don't have the expertise or the resources on hand.
And it sounds like because of these challenges that are specific to some of these less well-funded utilities, you're reporting that public water utilities could start being sold to private companies. So why are these private companies interested in the first place? And are they actually better equipped to handle Biden's PFAS rules than the public utilities?
Yeah, so those very things that I just described small systems as struggling with, technical capabilities, financial capabilities, those are the very things that the private water sector sort of specializes in. And the whole sort of point of a privatized water system is that they bring capital in. This sector, the idea, the way they make profit is by investing in systems, and they get to earn a return on that investment. And so the idea is they have capital to bring to bear. The other advantage that they have here is economies of scale. It's the same sort of advantage that these large public drinking water systems have, but that smaller systems lack. So around the PFAS regulation in particular, there's some concerns around supply chains and being able to sort of get the carbon filters and the, you know, different equipment that's going to be necessary to upgrade systems. But the private water sector, they can negotiate for better pricing and they can sort of have first dibs on the equipment that's going to be necessary to do that. So they have a lot of advantages that are appealing in some cases to some of these smaller systems. In order for a system to be sold privately, there has to be an interested purchaser. And I will say historically, it is often these sort of smaller struggling systems that end up selling to private companies. Struggling communities tend to be the ones that are more willing to sell. And it's the fact that they need these significant upgrades can be appealing to the private sector.
An important point that you make in your reporting is that there's a huge price tag to communities when private companies take over these public water utilities. So can you talk us through how that actually impacts the community itself as well as their water supply?
Absolutely. So private water is typically more expensive. The Government Accountability Office reviewed a handful of studies looking at this, and it can be hard to compare apples to apples, but they did so to the best of their ability and found that customers of private water companies were paying on average $15 to $21 per month more for their water bills. I spoke to a researcher at the University of Wisconsin who had similar findings and found that private water customers were typically paying 20 to 30% more for their water. The other concern that often comes up is the sort of lack of democratic control over this essential community resource. So the idea being that folks who are making decisions about rate increases and investments aren't democratically accountable in the same way that a mayor or a city council is. This is a point that the private water sector says can actually be a benefit, right? Like, we know that water rates are simply going to have to go up to meet all of these demands that I laid out earlier. But that can be a real challenging thing for a political official who is facing re-election. And so private water sector says that there's a benefit to being a little bit insulated from that. The private water sector, when they make rate increases, they have to go to a public utility commission. So it's not completely outside of democratic control, but it's a very different flavor than what a mayor or city council overseeing the water system has. The other thing that's important to note here is that in addition to being more expensive, the research shows that private water systems are actually more likely to comply with drinking water regulations. The same researcher at the University of Wisconsin who found that private drinking water was about 20 to 30% more expensive also found that private water systems were about 20 to 30% more likely to comply with drinking water regulations. The way he put it was, you know, like everything else, you pay for quality.
So how has the administration responded to this potential trend that's in part being spurred by the rules that they implemented? And are there other options other than privatization for struggling utilities?
Yeah, so the Biden EPA says that these rules are achievable and implementable for drinking water systems across the country. And they note that there are some flexibilities in there that give utilities more time and create support for particularly these smaller systems. And they point out that Congress, as part of the bipartisan infrastructure law, included a major infusion of funding for drinking water systems. There's a big increase for drinking water investments writ large, and then $9 billion that was tagged specifically for emerging contaminants like PFAS. But the administration itself acknowledges that this is not going to be enough money to cover the entire cost of just the PFAS regulation. And as we talked about before, the PFAS regulation is just one of a good number of challenges that the sector is facing. Now, there is another option out there beyond private, for sure, and that is consolidation. That's something that a lot of water sector experts have been talking about for a long time. This idea that it just doesn't make sense to have all of these sort of small systems sprinkled around the country, that there is a way of getting economies of scale by consolidating them with their neighbors, with other small systems in the region. And that is something that a lot of folks have been pushing for a number of years, but it's also something that takes a huge investment of time, sometimes capital, and frankly can be controversial in its own right. It can raise the same sorts of loss of control concerns that privatization can have, you know, sometimes with an extra dash of like town rivalries and football rivalries that, you know, you can kind of chuckle at, but are a real thing when it comes to doing this sort of thing.
Also, the Biden administration issued final rules for the EV tax credit on Friday, including new provisions that offer a reprieve for automakers who had said that qualifying for lucrative electric vehicle tax credits was too difficult. Biden hopes the move will balance his aims to bring more EVs onto the road quickly while also trying to wean the U.S. off foreign suppliers. But the rule is already facing pushback from critics, including West Virginia Democratic Senator Joe Manchin, who argued that federal tax credits should not boost any foreign suppliers. For more news on energy and the environment, subscribe to our free newsletter at politico.com/power-switch. And subscribe to Politico Pro to read our morning energy newsletter. Some of the music in today's show is composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. And that's our show. I'm Catherine Morehouse, and we'll see you back tomorrow.
Support for this program is provided by Chevron. Chevron is taking action to keep methane in the pipe. Their 2028 upstream methane intensity target is set to be 53% below the 2016 baseline. And they're committed to evolving facility designs and operating practices. That's energy in progress. Learn more at chevron.com/methane.